are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth will be told. On today's show, we have Chuck Thompson. Chuck, how are you?
Super good and getting better by the moment.
You know, you always say that. You know, you were the one of the first people that I met at in Vegas. How long has that show been now? A month or 2 months? Time flies when you're having fun.
It would be about 6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago, huh? Yeah.
I took a week off, and then I started back on the Big Beyond Belief program.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, then as I mean, like I said, you know, we had a booth as you just came through the door there. We were the first booth on the left-hand side, and I think you were one of the first people that I met. You came up to the booth, and I instantly knew that you have been one of our long-term followers, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember checking out I went and checked in, and I checked out the booths that were there. And first thing I saw was a Serious Growth tank top. And I saw the word Serious Growth, and it immediately triggered a memory of the whole course that I went through. And so I looked further on and I saw the books and I knew, oh God, I was home.
That's so funny. You know, the thing about that is being out of the industry like I was, I mean, you know, back in the 90s, as you know, we were pretty, you know, pretty out there, you know, all the time. And then we took a break. So, you know, my question going into this Vegas show being, you know, in a booth was like, I wonder how, if anybody will remember us or how relevant. You just don't know when you leave for that long. I mean, we didn't completely leave, but as far as being out there in the media all the time, it was, yeah, we had gone away for a while, you know. And I'll tell you what, the minute I met you, it's like, wait a minute, you know, maybe people still know about this, you know. As it turns out, of course, I was surprised. But, man, you were somebody that was that person that just, I mean, you were there from the beginning almost, right?
Pretty close. I knew about the Bulgarian burst system. I didn't get a copy of that, but I did get a partial copy of Serious Growth 2, and that was the first thing I saw, and I was so impressed. I actually sent away for the whole book, and that got me into a style of training that was completely different, because I had been doing so much volume training before that. And then when I got into there doing ramp one of Serious Growth 2 was my start. And I got there and it was quite an adjustment for me. But I caught on to it real quick and really enjoyed it. And I got some of the best gains of my life through the program.
Yeah.
And, you know, it enabled me as a natural athlete to compete against people in non-tested shows and hold my own. I wasn't able to beat them, but I was able to hold my own against them.
Well, there's something to be said for that, you know.
Absolutely.
At the top of the show, I asked a question before we got on the air, where you're from, and you told me, so now I know. Edmonton, huh?
Yes.
Okay, now, so what's Edmonton known for? Is every place in Canada known for hockey or what? Am I just have a misinformation or misconception?
No, but hockey is an important part of Edmonton, and we had a lot of success as a hockey city in the 80s and up to about 1990, and we had five of the best players on the planet on the team at that time. We had Wayne Gretzky, Glenn Anderson, Yari Curry, Grant Fuhr, Paul Coffey. We had so many talented players.
Yeah.
And we probably should have won more Stanley Cups there, but we didn't. There were a few little things that happened along the way, but it was good. And we've gone through a real dry spell with hockey. We've missed the playoffs for so many years, but we've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl now, and they're kind of leading a new resurgence in terms of it. And Normally, by this time of the year, we're eliminated from the playoffs. But
you're still in, huh?
Still hanging in there.
Yeah.
And so that's been good.
Well, you know, something in professional sports, I mean, in any professional sport, it's not easy to win. You know, there's a lot of competition out there. And again, this applies to bodybuilding, but it's across the board. And, you know, sometimes you wonder, wow, it's been such a dry spell. But that just goes to show you how difficult it really is, and how everything, especially in a team sport, how everything has to be right. The chemistry, I mean, the whole thing, you know. Otherwise, absolutely, it's like you wonder, how in the heck can you go that long before? I mean, even in some of our baseball teams in the, you know, in the Major League Baseball, I mean, a team went, 60 years before they got a World Series Cup? You think, I mean, a World Series ring? It's like, how does that happen, you know? Because everybody's so good at that level, you know, so.
Oh, absolutely, and there's so little that separates first from last. But, you know, it's those one-run games, and there's all those other close things.
Game of inches, baby. Yeah, it's a game of inches, right?
Absolutely. Every sport is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, sports is never A to B. It's never that simple.
Right.
It seems to get there the same way that the stock market works, right? Bouncing up and down all over the place, and that seems to be how sports, you know, go. And one year you're on top, and the next year you'd be.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that you don't go in with the strategy and a philosophy, because they don't. I mean, they all have this. That again, that just kind of goes to my point. That's how hard it is, because you go in. I mean, obviously, these guys don't go in without a game plan or, you know, any of that. You know,
but
you have to have a strategy. And the same thing happens now into our sport in bodybuilding. I did notice that, which I cracked up when I saw this, that you started at the age of 17. If you don't mind me asking you, how old are you?
I'm 66 now. I'll be 67 in February.
Finally, somebody that's older than me. Oh, my goodness. You don't look like it, but I was curious, because here's...
I don't feel like it either. I mean, I attributed it a lot to the whole bodybuilding lifestyle, because it's, since the age of 17 and probably before, it's been my hobby, my passion, my lifestyle.
Yeah, and that shows. But what was the tell for me potentially was that you started with Charles Atlas. Oh my!
Well, I was an avid comic reader, and I saw these ads for years and years and years from the time I was about 10 years old, and then at 17, I decided my original goal was I wanted to get bigger so I could play football. And so I started off with Charles Atlas. I sent away for the course.
Oh,
I did the full course. And, you know, I got stronger.
Yeah.
Didn't gain sufficient weight. And then I got sidetracked and did other things. And so I never did make it to the gridiron as a player. I did as a coach.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Was that that ad that was in those magazines? Because I saw those ads, I believe, and I'm trying to refresh my memory. I bet you can tell me. Was that the one? Didn't he have an ad in where somebody was kicking sand on him?
Absolutely.
That's what I thought. Was that the only ad that he had, or did he run different kinds of ads?
I think there was three different ones that he had.
I think I just saw that one.
And that's the one I remember. And, you know, there was... Shortly after I started training, I saw a picture of Charles Atlas when he was 79, I think it was, and he still looked amazing.
Really? Now, yeah. I don't know much about him. I mean, other than being in those magazines, it's funny. That was a good ad because, you know, it stuck with me, even though...
Well, he was the only one doing it.
Yeah. You know? So is he from the United States? I don't even know.
From Italy originally, and then he grew up in the States, and you know, with the entrepreneurs at the time, Bernard McFadden and these guys, they arranged all kinds of, he won a title of most perfectly built man, and then he would do strongman stunts.
Yeah.
A lot the same as Jack Lane and others like that.
Yeah. It's so funny because I knew nothing about him other than, you know, by the mag. You just told me a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know, you know? So, you know, seeing this, Charles Atlas, this is like a first for me, you know? I don't get many of these firsts anymore.
that was my first, and that was led me into some of the history in the sport, like Milo of Croton, the first progressive weight trainer, and because he carried a bull around on his shoulders from the time it was a newborn calf.
Very good.
Till it was 4 years old.
Yeah.
And then apparently he slaughtered the animal at 4 years and consumed it all in one day.
is that the legend or what?
That's the legend. He was a six-time Olympic wrestling champion.
Oh my goodness. So do you think that was true?
I'm not sure about that part, but
it's an interesting story anyway.
Absolutely. It would have been incredible to do that. And, I originally started looking around for things to carry around.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get to the steer part.
Yeah. Well, you got to start small first. When you were getting your information, again, I'm speaking as probably an ill-informed American here, but because I've talked to people who are in other countries like Australia. In fact, you know Ken Ross.
Absolutely. Very
okay.
Well.
Yeah, because I had him on the show. And he said that it would be months before in Australia that they would get any kind of information that was coming from like Venice Beach or, you know, out here where the bodybuilding has been, I guess, more, you know, usually more important than in other countries. And my question is, in Canada, was it like that too?
Oh, yeah.
Even though you're close to us?
There would be magazines on there, most notably Muscular Development, Muscle Builder Power, and Iron Man.
Yeah.
So they were around at that time, but in terms of finding them at the newsstand and everything else, it was kind of hit or miss type of thing.
No kidding. So it sounds like you might have gotten, were you getting your information sometimes like months, you know, after the we already had put it out here in our country, would you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain extent. Once I got to a point where I started competing, the information was a lot more readily available.
Yeah.
Because I was now part of a small group of people, like-minded people.
Yeah.
Who information was shared a lot.
Yeah. Interesting. So you already told me why you picked bodybuilding. You wanted to put on some size and some football.
That was the original plan.
Yeah. Okay. So then by the age of 24, then you started competing. So what made you take that step? Or did I miss Did I miss a step here?
The reason why I never got to the football gridiron is I got sidetracked with the sport of gymnastics.
Oh.
So I started doing that at university. And then I was competing, judging, coaching, doing all of that stuff. And I was judging at provincials that year. So I went down with a group of people and I had them drop me off at BJ's gym in Calgary, which was run by a gentleman by the name of BJ Annis. And he was a son-in-law of Stu Hart, who was part of the great wrestling family in Canada here.
Mm-hmm.
And I met BJ and worked out at his gym and met some of the guys. And he said, "Your arms look pretty good." He said, "You should think about competing in the upcoming bodybuilding competition." And you know, I was thrilled to hear this.
Yeah.
So I decided I would take a chance on it. I had, I think, about 6 weeks to prepare for it.
Oh my goodness!
And so I put my faith in one of the guys at the gym who gave the impression that he knew what he was doing. But I learned very quickly, he didn't know as much as I did.
No kidding.
And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I read all of the books I could on, because there was no internet, so I read all the books I could. And I talked to DJ and got a guideline for diet and everything else. And so that was my start. And I just had so much fun. And that kind of led me down that path.
That launched you. You know, I asked that question because you'd be surprised, maybe not. So many people that actually start competing, not only like with yourself where somebody says, hey, you should start competing, because that's actually what happened to me. But I did a show with somebody that said somebody made him a bet, you know. So the people get into the sport in different ways and for different reasons.
Absolutely. And I think probably what kept me in there is my first show, and the reason why I work with all the novice competitors is because that first show is so important. I've done a lot of shows, but that first one I remember in complete detail. I was standing next to a gentleman named Henry Cocker, who was a Canadian and North American champion. And he was just a class gentleman and helped me so much. And, I've made so many really great friends through this sport.
Yeah. So. It's funny that you say that you remembered your first one in detail. Mine was like almost the opposite. Mine was, I don't remember being on stage and going through my routine. Back then we had like a 90 seconds where we did a choreographed routine. And oh my, Chuck, for somebody told me, my he's my business partner now, but him telling me that I should go on stage, all I did was flashback, because I was afraid to do in school. I dropped classes if there was any kind of oral presentation, let alone get up in posing trunks, you know. And so that first show for me was, I mean, it was thrilling. There's no question about that. Yeah. But I can tell you what, which this kind of transcends into every part of the bodybuilding sport, is that repetition is the mother of key. And as you know, at least with me, I practice so much in my mandatories and my choreographed routine that what got me through that was the fact that I did practice, because I had no idea. I mean, that time on stage went by so fast. And people said to me afterwards, oh, you posed so well. I'm thinking, well, that's good, because I didn't remember any of that, you know. So it's really funny that you remember everything in detail.
I do. And I remember that, you know, like when I started, we had our posing routine, but there was no music to it. So it was just something we would put together a sequence of moves, and the connections was what it made it opposing routine.
Yeah.
And why we're artist athletes.
Yeah, that's true. So
you know, that's the artistic part.
Yeah.
I played 16 out of 24 guys. They were, you know, they just kind of said, you guys are class one, you're class two, class three.
Yeah.
It was just another word for group.
Right.
And they put us in there, and I was in the top group, and I stood next to Henry Cocker, and afterwards I said, I don't think anybody saw me in that show. I said, I think they were all looking at Henry. I said, but that's okay. So was I. And
well,
I did
there you
my
go.
Routine. I messed up my routine. So all the stuff that could go wrong went wrong there. So,
yeah.
But I had such a great time, and I was bitten by the bug, and it went on from there.
You know something, unless you, in my opinion, listen, I'm an athlete from way back. I started in sports, American sports, like football, basketball, baseball, you know, when I was 8 years old. And
what every American does.
Yeah, but you know something, when I got into bodybuilding, which was at the age of 25, I mean, when I really got into weightlifting, and that led me to bodybuilding, but that first show, I can totally relate to you. The bug bit me, and it was like this bug that I have never been bitten by before or since. You know, this sport does something that way, I think.
I always tell people the biggest thing that comes out of your first show is that when you go back to the gym after your first show, your training will be 50 to 100% better than it's ever been.
That is a true statement.
You'll finally understand why you do what you do.
That is a true statement. And then it gets even better from there, you know, and we'll talk about that. So here's what happens. You start at 24, and then all of a sudden you went on to do 134 shows over five decades. What the
yes.
hell? I guess you really were. The bug really did bite you, didn't it?
Well, when I started out, there was one show a year.
Is that right?
And so there wasn't very many. There's a whole lot of shows now.
Yeah.
I got to a level of shows. And one of the promoters asked me, he says, Chuck, you've done a lot of shows. How many have you actually done? I said, I don't know, but I've written it down. So I went and I checked my list and added it up, and I'd done 69 shows at that point.
And how old were you at that point then when you had done 69 shows? 69 shows?
That was probably almost 10 years ago, something like that, when I looked at that, because it was...
So between 24 and 56, I'm not good at math, but I'm pretty good. Between 24 when you started, and you said you're 66 now, in 56 you've done 69 shows?
Well, yeah, I supported all of the natural organizations that came around.
Yeah.
I always made sure I did their first shows. Plus, I was still in the non-tested realm and competing provincially and at the national championships. And, you know, so I got a few more shows in there. It just, so it was two or three a year I was doing.
Yeah.
And that kind of, it, you know, there was more and more federations. And, you know, we get to a couple of years ago, I did 10 shows in a year, which was absolutely nuts.
That is, that's, you're insane.
And hey. So last year I decided I was going to, my original plan was to take the year off. That fell by the wayside real quickly.
Yeah.
And I was going to cut back on 10 shows. And as it turned out, I managed to cut back to 12 shows last year.
Yeah, you're a sick little...
I wasn't good at it.
You're a sick little puppy, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
So the shows that you mainly competed in, like the first 66 shows or that we're talking about, were they mainly in Canada? Or did you start coming to the States?
Mainly in Canada. Yeah. And... then 1997, I was the test case for Alberta, my province.
What does that mean?
Well, I went to a show in BC that was billed as the Fraser Valley Natural Invitational. So I went there and I had great success. I won Masters and I won a Best Posing Award and I was third in the overall. So it was a great thing, and everybody wanted to have coffee with me when I got back.
People love a winner, baby.
And the question was, how natural was it?
Yeah.
Because people had known my attitude towards it. And my response was always the same. It was a pleasure to go backstage and have the women look like women.
You know, unless you've been in that sport, that's a huge saying right there, because I've seen over the years where, wow, pretty scary.
I know. I know. I had a girl from Quebec wink at me at one point, and I wasn't quite sure how to take it.
It's best just to be noncommittal. Like, well, yes, yeah. I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, I met Astrid Falcone, who was a Canadian champion. And she had been a cheerleader for the Toronto Argonauts football team in Canada. And when I saw her at the Canadas, she could have played linebacker.
Oh, my goodness.
Toronto Argonauts. So she had transformed her body so much. And, you know, there's a number of people that I've known that have gone that route. And my biggest regret for most of them is, and the young kids nowadays, is that most of them get on the drugs way too early.
Yeah.
They don't compete. They don't train and compete naturally.
Yeah.
And see how far they can take the body.
That's a huge mistake. I totally agree with that.
Absolutely. I can understand a Kai Green or whatever who went the natural route and then moved on to other challenges and that sort of thing. And that's fine. That's a decision we have to make.
Sure.
But I know in my case, I was told to get serious about the sport by one of our top international judges. And by that, he meant due to steroids, performance enhancing drugs. And the book on me at that time was that with my genetics, I could win at the provincial level, I could win at the Western Canadian level, and I would be competitive at the Canada level. So there was no Mr. Olympia title in my future. And that was about as much as I could hope to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing about it, and I think you're mentioning it, is that some people don't realize that, you know, as much as I don't condone using, you know, steroids or anything like that, but I did because it was a choice. Because otherwise, it's like, you know, you're as good as you can be. You're you know, it does make a difference, but it doesn't mean that, you know, the weight, that how far that you took your physique wasn't a great thing, because it was.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I had one fellow who said that, and this was an interview that we did at one point, and his comment was, it would be like a supermodel doing a show without lipstick.
Yeah, interesting analogy. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, and so that was his take on the difference it made. But
yeah,
back in those days, you know, in the 70s, it was a lot different.
It was.
Because there was about 7 or 8 different steroids that were around at that time. Most of them were used in the field of veterinary.
Mm-hmm.
And people had one that they liked, and that's what they would use.
Yeah.
Nobody was stacking at that point or experimenting in that route.
Yeah.
But, and there was no such thing as tapering off and coming down off them. I had a buddy who told me that after a show, it took him 6 months to recover.
Yeah.
So, and that's where it was at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a picture of 3 gentlemen, Eugene Sandow, and his regime was beef and beer. That was his diet. It was natural.
A lot of ways to get to the top.
Absolutely. And then you leap forward to the 70s and Arnold, and that was, you know, let's say one steroid. And then we leap forward to a fellow like Jay Cutler, and we're talking multiple anabolics. We're talking human growth hormone, and we're talking insulin.
Yeah.
Which is produced grotesque, massive physiques, but not one that most people want to aspire to.
Not aesthetics. The aesthetics is gone.
A huge swing, pendular swing back the other way.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, in the Olympia this year was a lot different than previous years.
Yeah, and it's going to, you know, there's, as time goes on, you know, things do change, but you're right about the progression of all this. Getting back to you again now. So 134 shows, you end up becoming a 4-time world champion and 2 INBA Natural Universe titles and 2 AAU world titles.
Yes.
Now, did you compete in the AAU first?
No, I competed with Denny and the INBA.
Oh, really?
That was my first. And, you know, I, 2004, I competed at the Olympia, and it was the only time I've ever competed at a level and questioned whether I belonged there.
Really?
One of our judges came up to me and he said, no, he said, you definitely belong here. So I went back to the gym and rededicated myself, and 2005, I finished 2nd at the universe. And 2006, I went and won it for the first time. So,
I wonder how, you know, things. It's really interesting how sometimes people that you meet do make a difference. I mean, potentially, it's just like this guy, this judge. I wonder how that would have been if he would have said, "Chuck, go sing opera because you have no shot in doing this." I wonder how that would have changed your path compared to what he said. Just a question. You know, it may have just spurred you on, because that kind of stuff does to me when they tell me I can't do it.
Never have even mentioned that that have been a possibility. So
yeah.
it's definitely gone. I stayed true to my course. I took a step back from the sport for a bit, but then came back. And because this was the early 80s when I was told that. And then I came back and competed on my terms, and felt that, you know, I remember I had four wisdom teeth out on a Tuesday and competed on a Saturday. And I don't remember the show very well. I looked like a chipmunk. And there, I think there was eight of us in the class. But I was the freak. I was the oddball in the class because all of the other guys were on something.
Yeah.
And they were very open about it backstage. And so it was just one of those things where, you know, I understood that, but I wasn't prepared to do that. Heart and cancer on both sides of the family. I work with kids. It didn't seem like a good idea to me.
Yeah.
And plus, I don't think I would be here today if I were chosen that route. And with the without the drugs, I've had far more success than I ever could have with the drugs, because I've won at the provincial level, I've won at the Western Canadian level, I won at the Canada's, I won at the North American level, I've won a couple of international shows, two universe titles, an AAU, two world titles there. So,
hey, what the heck, you know, and you feel good about it, you know?
I feel great. I don't feel any different at 66 than I did when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know that I can relate to that too, you know, just being, it's a way of life, you know.
Absolutely.
Nothing's changed that way except that I don't compete anymore. I'm somebody who's actually more just like having a good time in the gym and just being old and young, you know.
Well, so. I understand that, and I'm appreciative for every day I can get to the gym and every day, because I'm just like a kid in a candy store when I get there.
Yeah.
It's so much fun, and I still enjoy doing what I'm doing. I have some physical limitations that affect how much I can lift in certain exercises, and in some I can still use decent poundages. So.
Now, your physical limitations, is it because of something that's happened as you've aged, or is it something that you were born with?
One of them is a birth defect. I have leg Peutz disease, which is how the femur articulates in the hip joint. The head of the femur is misshapen and it doesn't articulate properly.
Does that cause you like inflammation and pain?
It's supposed to cause me a lot of it, but when I was told half my lifetime ago that I should never have done any of the stuff that I've done.
Mm-hmm. Who told you that, Chuck? A doctor?
Doctor. Yep. And because I'd been doing a lot of running at that time. I did our Jasper Banff relay, which was a 24-hour relay, and I did a lot of other running and some other road races, and it was just fun to do. I did that.
Yeah.
The only concession I made at that time is I stopped running. I took up stationary bike as my cardio choice and decided that if I'm going to blow out the hip, I would rather do it in the gym rather than riding a bike or rather than running.
Running, yeah. Because the running obviously is pretty, there's quite a bit of stress obviously when you run like
on
that.
The joints.
Especially
yeah.
So over time.
Absolutely. So I've stayed with that and I still do all the stuff that I've done and I'm still around. I'm a candidate for a hip replacement. But it should have happened before now.
Yeah. So are you just putting it off until you absolutely have to?
Well, I'm putting it off because I don't need to.
Yeah, better yet.
And that's the best thing. I mean,
I know my dad had his hip replaced, and what happened? He waited too long, and it actually shortened the leg to the point where it just really threw him out of whack. That's why I was asking you. I mean, if you don't need it, you don't need it.
So I continue on with doing squats and doing all the stuff that I was told not to do.
Yeah.
So I continue to do that. And, I have I think it's an arthritic shoulder, and that's just overuse.
I call that birthday disease. You just had too many of them now, like me.
Yeah, and it was all the lifting, all the competing, all the judging and the coaching of gymnastics and sports, spotting teenage athletes and all of that stuff, which contributed to that. But, about 5 years ago, I discovered a muscle and joint cream that I use. And
I think you told me about that at the Vegas show. In fact, I have some. You gave me some.
It's called P3, and it's the best stuff I've ever used, and it's made a world of difference. And I'm a huge fan, and you know, I see a lot of products, and a lot of people send me samples to try to try and sell me something or to get me to endorse their product. And most of the time, it just kind of migrates across my desk and falls into the round cylinder that sits beside my desk.
Understood.
Because that's where most of that stuff belongs.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But this did, and I was so impressed by it, I called the company, left them a long voice message. 10 minutes after I hung up, they called me back, a long discussion. And so I've been a funded athlete plus a spokesperson for them for the last 5 years. And it's been a great, great association. And it has, as I say, it's worked wonders for me.
It's nice when you find a connection like that, you know, because obviously it's your product in reality will not work for 100% of the people out there, but it's going to work for a percentage of the people out there. And you don't know that unless you try it. And that's why I tell people, you know, the best thing to do is experiment and you decide if it works for Chuck. It may not work for me, but if it works for you, then that's good.
Well, the first thing I noticed when I started using the product is I was sleeping better. No pain triggers to wake me up.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went from there. And, you know, I've given out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of samples to people at bodybuilding workshops and shows. And it's been a great association.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, you know, and I think you'll probably relate to this, being in the sport and trying as many supplements over the years, and because our bodies are our laboratory, and you know,
absolutely.
Maybe some people don't really realize that, and it's with training, it's with everything, because we want to know exactly how everything works. So as you know, and you just mentioned, a lot of the stuff that's out there, especially with the supplement world, most of it is overhyped and it doesn't work anywhere close to what they claim. We know that. But
except for the guys who test positive at Olympic events and all these other things, because they always blame the supplements.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's go with that.
Like anybody's going to put in extra stuff and sell it for $40.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
That's not going to happen.
Exactly. But I tell you, I came across something. And in fact, I met the girl at the event, and she was a couple of booths down from us, and she was doing the CBD oil.
Yes.
And I've heard about it for quite a while, and I kept thinking, this is bull crap, you know. And I have to tell you something. I tried some of that stuff, Chuck, and it works for me. And it's not something – I've done it over and over again. I've gone off of it just to be my own subject test matter. And
yep.
I tell you something, and what I was concerned about was that it was only going to be a masking agent. And that for me sometimes is almost worse because you don't know the further damage that you're doing. That's what happens with cortisone shots a lot of times. You know, it masks that to a point. Now, but what
cortisone is so bad for you because it weakens the tendons and ligaments.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is not a good thing.
No, but I have to tell you. So what I did is I took the CBD oil for about 7 days to saturate it, get it into my system. But here's what I've learned about it. It is actually it really does take away the inflammation. I have an issue with my left knee.
Yep.
And I don't like to take stuff anymore unless I have to. And that includes supplements. I only take, you know, what I need. I don't like to overload the body with stuff, you know, that's just the way it is. Same with training.
And absolutely. I'm a minimalist as far as supplements.
Yeah.
And with the P3 in my case, I was taking, I was using A5-3-5 as a topical. Plus I was taking 2 Aleve a day. That was my protocol prior to discovering this other product. And now all I use is the P3.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you mentioned the CBD oil. I've just started trying it because I'm interested to see how that is going to help. And so they, you know, at the show, they gave me some to try on my hip, and you know, I and it was good. It,
I was like, I can't, this can't be.
I've done a bit of research on it since then.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah. And, I mean, I was blown away by it.
It's gotten a huge amount of publicity in the athletic world.
Yeah.
Since then. But their product was derived from hemp.
Right.
Means it has a minuscule amount of the THC in it. And, you know, so it's acceptable with on the WADA banned substance list. It's actually listed on there.
I didn't know that.
So, it, well, it is for 2020. Mm-hmm. And so it's on there, but we've been cautioned through the AAU and some of the other organizations I compete for that make sure it's a certified product, and the product that at the Olympia was.
Yeah.
I saw their certification and everything else there. And so, because what a lot of the suppliers are doing is they're just taking hemp plants or cannabis plants and grinding them down. And so then there's no control over how much THC is actually in there.
Yeah.
And because the THC is still on the banned substance list or, WADA.
Yeah. I didn't know that, you know, but I was really amazed about that. I think it's a nice find. And I noticed that I only have to use it once every maybe 7 to 10 days, you know, then I can start feeling it, that pain starting to come back in. But, so that tells me that it's not just simply masking. I learned, you know, one time from, and actually cortisone did help me, in my early days, all of a sudden I couldn't grab anything with my thumb. And the minute I got the cortisone shot, I could, and it was because it took the inflammation out. I was able to heal, you know? So that told me, you know, this is where overtraining becomes, you know, you got to be very careful about that, because that's what the inflammation can do to you. It can shut you down.
Definitely. I've had 2 cortisone shots in my life. And one was for, I think it was golfer's elbow, you know?
Yeah.
And so had it there, and he told me maximum would be 3 shots, and he was only prepared to give me 2, and I was only prepared to have 1. So he stuck the needle in and said, "Is that the spot?" I said, "No." He pulled the needle out, stuck it in again. "Is that the spot?" "No." He didn't have to ask me the third time, because he hit the spot dead center.
Yeah.
And he told me it would get worse before it got better. But that night I was back in the gym doing chin-ups.
No, it's amazing, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, my body has responded well to a lot of these things. Plus just the training helps pound things back into place too.
Exactly. Well, it brings in new oxygen and red blood, and that's a healer. So I see I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. In the early 90s then is when Serious Growth Training entered your life. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then how did you find Serious Growth?
Well, I was competing at the Canada's, and Alberta was drug tested at the provincial level. We drug tested every single athlete in the province in 92 and 93. And then at the end of 93, they said that that would never happen again, because what people were doing to beat the test was far worse than even just doing the steroids.
Is that right?
So, but during those 2 years, so in 92, I got our president, Ron Wolsey. He says, "Here's something I think you might enjoy." So he gave me a copy of the workout portion of the Serious Growth.
Wow.
I took a look at it, read it, and the information that was on it there. And wow. I was blown away. I was really impressed. It made so much sense to me. And so then I sent away for the course and got the book. And it led me into other things like neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah. Was
in it. And it got me going in that positive self-talk. And that was kind of the foundation of that has led me to where I am today.
Interesting. Well, you know, one of the things I learned when we, and when I say we, it's my partner, Dr. Horein, him and I wrote the book. You know, we were the ones that were the two lab rats in the gym figuring this thing out. But one of the things that we learned early on back then was that so many of the guys that were out there really didn't have a, like a formula or a strategy, a well thought out strategy in the way they were training. It was more instinctive, which is okay. It's very important to be instinctive, intuitive, and all that. But we actually came up with what we thought was a formula to, you know, and again, that was based on firsthand us being in the gym doing implementation and then understanding, you know, the result and then trying to reproduce the result. I mean, that it took a long time for us to come and make these training courses because we wanted to make sure that we could reproduce the result. So all we really did is put everything into a formula that made sense. Like that's one of the things that you're saying, you know? And so it's nice to hear that because, you know, the thing about that is what we learned about that is that when you develop a foundation, a formula, it's, that means the same thing. When you develop a strong foundation, well, you know, then all of a sudden, as we're finding out in our company, it stands the test of time. We're still we're still relevant after all these years, you know, and that I think, you know, even though it's our own program, I think that that is a mark of something that's good because anybody that stays in a industry like yourself, you know, you've kept yourself relevant and you've done something right for a long period of time. In that time, look how many things have come and gone, these trendy things. You know, they're just, I call them SOS, shiny object syndrome.
Well, it started with Nautilus.
yeah, a flash in the pan, and you know, but you know,
it made a lot of sense.
Yeah,
and a lot of guys were training on it.
Yeah,
I remember Arthur Jones gave Sergio Oliva a set of Nautilus equipment, and then went to check on him and was thoroughly pissed off because Sergio was reconfiguring the stuff.
That sounds like Platts. He used to do that stuff too. Yeah, that's funny. But actually, I think not only Sergio, but I think one of his test people was Katie Vieter.
Yes.
They did that where he put on 65 pounds and so many. Well, you know, they didn't tell the whole story about that. And I don't know if you know this, but he actually dropped a bunch of weight before he actually did that test. Because, you know, when you drop a bunch of weight like that and drop a bunch of muscle, when you go start training again, guess what? You're going to put all that muscle on in a hurry.
Muscle memory. Rebound after depleting.
They didn't tell us that whole story back then, you know? That kind of happens a lot.
It's a great story.
It is a great story. No, it is. I agree with you. So then you found Serious Growth and it found you. And then now you're in 2020, you've started to use the Big Bang Belief version.
Yeah, well, I went through Serious Growth 2. I went through that several times. And I'm a big believer in it. And then when Serious Growth, Big Beyond Belief came out, I went to that and started doing that program.
Yeah.
And I did that for a long time. And then I went to the Titan Training.
Oh, my goodness.
One after that. And so I went through that. And, you know, was really pleased with the program and the direction it allowed me to go.
Yeah.
You know, the neat thing about the Titan Training was the muscle rounds.
Yeah, I thought that made those are pretty interesting.
I really enjoyed those, and I incorporated that into other things that I've done.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. You know, when Russ and I were in the gym like that, it was a lot of fun, you know, going through and sort of discovering these different ideas. And boy, I tell you what, when you start making the first one we did, you know, obviously was Bulgarian Burst, and to keep making these, the evolution of all these, it got pretty, you know, it was like it gets harder and harder to do, you know, to come up with something that really does work.
But they were different.
Yeah.
They were sufficiently different, and they were provided me with a different challenge with each successive generation or version of
right. Well, you know, the thing about that is the other thing that really was an influence for us was one of the things I learned when I was over in Bulgaria, because this all started in my Bulgaria trip when I went over there, you know?
Yes.
And this is how that whole thing started with Bulgarian verse. But one of the things that the Bulgarians were just famous for then was they said, look, we operate from a position of application first, theory second. And all they meant by that, Chuck, was that they always, because they were applying and trying it themselves first, it allowed them to think outside the box as opposed to reading all the theory. You can see how that distinction changes that dynamic. You know, they didn't want to be hamstrung by theory. Not that the theory wasn't good, but they just felt like it should be in second place, position, as opposed to going in there and saying, okay, what's the stated mission? Okay, in their case, it was to develop the strongest men in the world, which they did in 9 years. Okay.
Absolutely. And they were training as much as 7 times a day.
Yeah, 5 times. When I was there, it was 5 times a day. And I saw that, you know, up close in front. And so that really was a good thing that happened to us because we weren't afraid to think outside the box and do some stuff that maybe not, you know, was conventional. But we knew it worked. It was like what they said. They said, look, we know it works. So the theory people, we know it works. So why don't you just tell us why? Because we already know that it works. And so we operated from that position. That was a strong influence that we got from that part of the world back then, which was amazing because you would think that they were way behind us. And in some ways, they were 50 years behind us, you know, but in training, they were way ahead of us. They were 8 years ahead of us.
But the reason why was because they took all this stuff from North America and applied it where we didn't.
Yeah. That's true. No. And they told me when I was over there, because I was very upfront. I said, look, I'm over here and I'm going to tell you right now, if I have any of this, if this information is something that I can use, I'm going to go and write a book on bodybuilding, even though it's, you know, most of their information was based for Olympic lifting, but they actually told us, you know, for bodybuilding. They said the reason why we don't push the bodybuilding thing is because powerlifters are like the kings of the country. They were like rock stars over there, where bodybuilding was just not in that category. But they had all the information. I said, well, I'm going to go write a training course. And I said, doesn't that make you wonder if you want to give me this information? They said, absolutely not. I said, we're so far, we're constantly trying new things that by the time your information comes out, we'll be on to something different. I thought that was really kind of like the Walt Disney sort of strategy, you know, create faster than someone can copy.
But that's like most sports. Most sports are catch up sports. We catch up to what the current world champion is, and we aspire to what they're doing this year.
Yeah.
But
that's a good point, actually.
World champions, as they move on next year.
Yeah, good point.
So they're still ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's why the Russians are so up in arms about being suspended from the Olympic Games, because it takes athletes out of that area and it takes them out of that information that would be gathered.
Yeah. At that time. Well, I tell you what, the difference between Bulgarians at that time when I was there and the Russians, the Bulgarians invited us into the training center. And they said, yeah, come on, watch this. You know, we went to seminars with these sports doctors and coaches. They were just very forthcoming with the information. And then we go to Russia. Oh, hell, they knew that we were coming in. They took their athletes 2 hours away. We couldn't get nowhere near them. I mean, they had some, you know, sports doctors giving us some information, but it was nothing like what the Bulgarians did. They were amazing, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that. So now, Chuck, all these years that you've been in it, you know, I mean, you know, Albert Einstein said it best when he said, real knowledge is through experience. And my dad said it in a different way. He said, it's really hard to replace firsthand experience. Those are both mean the same. You've been around here and in the industry for as long as I have, if not longer. So yeah. What is some of, with all your experience and all this value that you have, what do you do with all your knowledge now besides competing?
Well, I help out at all the workshops that are put on by the organization. I go out there and I help the people learn how to pose, and provide them with some of the information that they need to have a more positive experience on the day of the show.
Yeah.
And I'm very big in terms of inspirational and motivational messages. And a friend of mine was going through a nasty divorce, so I started sending her inspirational messages every day. And we've kind of gone full circle because I sent her one each day. She sends me back one.
Mm-hmm.
And but that one person has grown to 90 plus people at this point.
Is that right?
Every morning I send out a message to 90 people.
Wow.
And, you know, I get some people who respond daily. I get some people who respond once in a while. I get some people who don't respond. But once a year, I send out a message that if you're tired of hearing from me in the morning, you know, just let me know and I'll take you off the list.
Right.
Nobody drops off.
Yeah.
But it helps them. It helps me because I see them first.
Yeah.
And I'm really big on motivational words, power words. For me, the most powerful word in the universe is the word yes, because it moves mountains. And I am or I will are other words that are powerful. And I always tell people getting ready for shows, you can't afford the luxury of a negative thought, because negativity and stress, all of that stuff changes body chemistry.
That's
so
true.
It changes the way they look.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And it makes, and you know, if you take this maybe a step further, when you're under that kind of stress and you're thinking that way, that creates acid in your body. Your body becomes acidic. And we know that disease needs acid. And if you can keep your body out of an acidic state, an alkaline state, in other words, it's virtually impossible for disease to harbor itself there.
And absolutely.
So I think that what you're doing is a fabulous thing. Hey, do you get paid for this, or do you just do it because you love this so much?
I do it because of the passion I have for it.
Yeah.
I do the same thing for the teachers at school. I send out once a week, I send out a collection of my take on life. So there's some inspirational messages that people have put forth over the years, people like Lao Tzu or Albert Einstein or whoever.
Yeah.
And also interesting historical events that have happened on that day, plus some cartoons that are motivational, informational, or just plain way out there.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, you're one of those people. I mean, we connect because we're of that same mindset and group that I have passion for what I do. So I feel it the minute I meet somebody, whether or not they do. It's obvious. And you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Well, the highlight for me in Vegas was, as I say, I saw the Serious Growth booth, and I started talking to people there, and I said, wow, I said, I remember this from the 90s, and, Leo Costa did this, and they said, well, Leo's here. I said, you're kidding me. And then you were coming back to the table, and I got to meet you, and that was truly one of the highlights of my weekend there.
Oh, it was something else. And it goes both ways. You know, that's the thing, you know, that sometimes people don't realize is like, I get the same feeling and honored to meet people such as yourself. And I met quite a few of you at that event. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw me go up on stage, but I was, you know, in that weekend, I kept thinking, what the hell's so different about this that's making me, you know, it was stirring me up. And then I realized it was about the people that were all there. They had one thing in common. They wanted to be there, and they were there for the love of the game, Chuck. And that for me made me want to get into this thing now, to where I'm like right in the middle of it. And you were one of those people, man. It was so obvious and so neat, you know, to meet you that way. I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
What's your favorite exercise and why? So many people have this problem. They think it's a loaded question.
It is, because, you know, I know people will most often pick the show muscle.
Yeah. What first comes to your mind? What's your favorite exercise?
It would have to be squats.
Why?
with my hip, I have to do bench squats, just safety's sake. And but I like the challenge of it. And it's mind over matter. I'm thinking I'm going to lift this weight, and I know the weight is thinking, oh, no, you're not. And it's overcoming that, and it's a daily thing.
That's funny you said that, because I've been in my Instagram posts. I don't know if you're watching some of my Instagram posts.
Yes, I am.
But today I did one that it was for the holidays, you know. And I talk about two serious growthers. I'm trying to set us apart, you know. There's serious growthers, and then there's wannabe serious growthers, you know. So today's post was, look, I'm just going to just go right to the heart of it. I said, look, just because today's Christmas Eve day and tomorrow is Christmas doesn't mean that you don't get into the gym and get your workout in. It's weights before dates, baby. You know, that's just sort of the mindset. And it's so funny that you say that with your exercise. The obstacle is the motivation has to be greater than the obstacle. And what draws the serious growthers to the obstacle is the fact that it is so darn hard to get over. That's what draws us there. You know, that's the difference between the real guys out there in the sport and the wannabes.
Well, every day in the gym is a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, it's never you go there and just go through the motions. You don't do that.
Yeah.
I walk through the door, I'm ready to go, and then I look around for somebody yawning. And if I see somebody yawning in the gym, I go up and I thank them, as I know I've stolen their energy.
That's very selfish, Chuck.
I know, it's all about me.
Well, good, I'm glad you admit that.
So the thing is, after that first time, people are very reluctant to yawn around me.
I would imagine so.
Positive effect in the gym.
There you go. Look at that. Turned into a positive. So what's your least favorite exercise and why? What comes first to your mind?
Cardio.
Oh, man. I'm. You know, I just might agree with you on that. I hate it. And I've been doing it for almost 30 years now. I do it every day.
I've been doing it longer than that, and I hate it. It's not fun. Have to have something else to do while I'm doing cardio.
Yeah.
Listen to music or watch TV or read a book or do all the three things together.
I hear you.
Just to kill the time.
Yeah, boredom can kill you. And I mean, a lot of people don't realize, even with training, you know, there's so much routine and regimen that you have to do in order to get a result, whether it be in the weight room or even doing cardio. And the average person doesn't really understand that. And that's the reason why so many people have shiny object syndrome, because, you know, their brain adapts before the body does. And they think that, okay, it's time to change. And the truth of the matter is you have to be willing to go into the gym every single day and, you know, put yourself through a regimen over and over and over again until you get a result. Who wants to do that unless you're a crazy bodybuilder?
Well, I know. I mean, I had a fellow come up to me at a show one time. He says, Chuck, I really admire what you've done. If I could train for 2 weeks and look like you, I'd do it.
For 2 weeks?
And I was counting the decades, you know?
Oh,
and,
God. That's amazing.
We live in an instant pudding society.
That's a true statement.
People want everything now.
Yep.
And I think that's why there's the rush to the drugs and everything else, because they start out training, they're not getting the stuff fast enough.
Yeah.
And so they figure that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that, again, those people, just like programs, those are the people that come and go. And old dogs like you and I, we're going to stick around a long time, you know, because we're doing some of the basic things that need to be done throughout a program. There's really no magic here besides having smart and hard work as a part of the formula, you know?
Hard work is the magic.
Yep. And you got it. That's a true statement. So
and
listen.
People don't want to hear that.
No, of course not. You know, that's a bad word, you know? So, so listen, we're going to wrap this thing up. This has been a great, I knew already before I ever came on, I knew this is going to be a really good interview, a heart-to-heart interview, you know, and you certainly didn't let me down by any stretch of the imagination, man.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm just so happy and glad that I've met you guys in the industry. In fact, I'm calling out and looking for more serious growthers that are out there. And they're all starting to come out of the woodwork. And my mission now, Chuck, is to go out and save the SOSers and bring them into the serious growth plan. You know?
Absolutely.
So, hey, listen, is there anything that you would like to promote? I mean, you talked about your cream on our show here. Like, can people go get that somewhere, like on a website?
Yes, there's a website and an 800 number people can call. It's made in Abbotsford, BC, in Canada here, but they also have a U.S. distributor. And so the best thing is to call the 800 number and talk to a wonderful lady named Nancy.
So say what the name of the product is again, the P3?
It's P3.
Okay.
And it originated in Great Britain. It was used on racehorses and to treat mastitis in cows.
Oh, interesting.
You can't give cows just anything because it winds up in the milk.
Right.
So when they formulated for humans, they added more of the calendula oil. Calendula is the marigold, and that's the anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
So they added more of that and formulated it for humans.
So what's the name of the website that you can go to?
If you just Google P3 cream, it'll come up and go there.
Find it there. Sounds good. Well, listen, again, I just really appreciate you taking out your time to come on and do this show. I'm glad to see you again. And where's your next show?
Well, it started making my list for 2020. Uh-huh. And I'll probably start in May in Calgary with the NPAA. It's probably what I'll do. But I've got three shows scheduled in about 20 days. But there's a fourth one I could do. So I might do four shows in 20 days, which I did this year. But, you know, I've got a list of eight shows that I've got highlighted in yellow. Those are ones for sure I'm going to do. And then I have six more in red that, you know, interest me and maybe I'll probably do so.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, last year you cut it down to 12. Maybe you're going to cut this one. You'll cut this one down to like 11 and a half shows.
Well, I have a buddy, Rodney Gaines, who I met at the AAU World. And, you know, he did 30 shows this year. He's absolutely nuts.
Oh, my goodness.
You mentioned Ken Ross earlier. Ross, another guy.
Yeah, he's another guy.
I went up to him one year at the banquet at the IMBA Natural Olympia. And I said, Ken, I want to congratulate you on doing 25 shows this year. I said, it is a pleasure to run into someone who's even more nuts than I am.
Yeah, no kidding. It's unbelievable. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, maybe someday we'll cross paths again, you know, because I told Denny when I was there at the show, Denny Kekos, I said, look, I am so impressed by this movement that I want to be right in the middle of it, you know. And so hopefully, and I'm sure that you and I will once again cross our paths and we'll have a whole new bunch of stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
All right, Chuck. Well, listen, you have a great day. Do you do Christmas?
Yeah, just a quiet one here with me and cats. But once I'm finished here, then I'm going to get ready and head off to the gym. They're open till 5 today, so I get a chance to get a workout in.
Attaboy.
Then they're closed the next two, so I've had to adjust my workouts this week a little bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man.
It's a thing to do.
That's the way it goes. Well, listen, man, you have a good day and a good couple of days, and we'll be seeing each other again, all right?
Sounds like a plan. Keep up the great work and keep doing all the wonderful things you're doing.
Sounds like a plan, Chuck. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.